Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a new big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate.
All right, good morning and welcome. Are we still there? All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And how you doing, Sam?
Great now. You made it just in time. I'm so impressed.
You know, the things about life, there's so many different things about life as we grow and age, is how do you handle situations when things don't go according to plan? Well, today, things did not go according to plan for me. But I'm here.
I think you handled it perfectly then. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, if you only knew. It was an odyssey. But we're here. Blessed to be here. Got my good friend, Mr. Michael Brox, who's going to be joining us. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, Earl. Thanks for having me today. Appreciate it.
Let me see. We got an issue of blood with this.
I can go over to the other
one. Yeah, why don't you go to that one?
Again, we just talked about that adversity, and you adjust.
You okay, you got it.
You adapt, and we just adapted.
All right. So, So Sam, it looks beautiful outside, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm very happy to see the sun. It's about time.
Yeah, it really is. And we got some great weather coming towards the end of next week or early next week. In the 70s.
So I can get my bike out?
Yeah, man. I haven't had mine out yet.
Don't get too eager now, guys. We're still in Wisconsin.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, so Mike is a former educator, a retired educator. And I wanted to spend this morning dealing with and talking about education, and because I get frustrated. The more I hear people talking about education, especially people who don't know and about it, but yet they've got, you know, everything to say about it, and especially as it relates to public school education, I thought I'd reach out to my good friend Mike Brox, and who's a newly retired educator. How long were you in education?
Almost 30 years. And newly retired. But, you know, I'm busier now than I was when I was in that classroom for about 8 to 10 hours a day. Because people think because you're retired, you have all this time. But, you know, once you have more time, you find more things to do.
So you're a newly retired person. I've been retired for about 15 years.
I can't tell. Yeah. You're busy. You're always, right. You know.
Because to me, retirement is not about retiring and sitting in a rocking chair and, you know, mm-hmm. and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So my focus mm-hmm. is, and always will be, I've got some some folk that I really respect, some men in their 70s and who are still active, who are still engaged. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As long as my health is good, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be active and engaged.
You know, Earl, it seems like retirement opens you up because you're so focused when you're working, and you know you're in that race, in that rat race, some people call it. But you're on your career path, and you're focused on what you're doing. But once you're retired, it seems to open up your mind and access to opportunities that you wouldn't otherwise have privy to.
So did you only work in Milwaukee Public Schools? Or?
No, I worked in public schools. I also worked in the private sector, Choice Charter, and I also worked in a structured setting, which is like St. Charles. I was lead teacher over there for 6 years. And those students over there are all adjudicated. So, they have to be there, and it's a whole different, set of circumstances.
So why did you choose education?
If
you had it to do all over again.
It's a calling. It chooses you. Yeah. It chooses you. I started out, as you know, I got into it in about 1984. I founded Afrofest in 83, politically bogged down. It wasn't a good fit for me. And so I moved on. And I moved on. I started out as a worker in a group home. And, working with young men and women in that group home. And I said, well, and I always did want to be a teacher, ever since, growing up at Washington High School, which you're familiar with.
Right. So my 50-year reunion is this year.
Well, you graduated, what, 74?
72.
72. I was 73.
Yeah.
So you didn't have time to hang out with us underclassmen.
Well, so, like I said, 50 years.
Wow.
Certainly doesn't seem to be that, but anyway.
And in education, it certainly has changed a lot, too. So I went on and found myself, really, I was working as a support teacher's aide. It was what it was called back then. Over at a middle school, and I got the bug. And my mentor, who was Ronnie Collagen, who was a well-known person in circles, she said, you should go ahead and get your certification and you should become a teacher. She thought it would be a good special ed teacher.
Right.
And so I came in as in special ed, special education.
You know, man, I always talk about special ed. I have a fondness for special ed. Okay. And because, again, my wife and I have been raising a young man who, for 18 years, who's finishing up his special ed in Milwaukee Public Schools. When you're in special ed, you can stay there until you're 21.
21, yes.
So this will be he's in his last month at Milwaukee Public Schools. And so I have an affinity for the district because people who want to talk about it don't have any concept about how many students there really are in the district who have been tagged with special needs.
Right. Well, you have different categories. Actually, special ed was identified officially, quote unquote, with the IDEA Act, with the individuals, individuals with, special
disabilities.
Needs. Right, with Disabilities
right.
Education Act.
Right.
In the 90s, which basically funded special education, and it allowed us to segregate that population from the general population. And I had, these kids are they may be cognitive disabled, they may be,
physically
or right. or behaviorally,
right.
And things like that. But I had, I love them. I love them because one thing about these, students, these scholars, is that they don't really have clearly defined borders. If I may share a story quickly.
Go ahead.
Okay, we were having one day. I pulled in the cart that had the TV on it
right.
in the public schools, and when they saw that, everybody
right.
got happy. And they didn't care if it was an education or a black and white movie
right.
or something. They
right.
was just, hey, we get to see a movie.
Yeah.
And so what we pulled it in, and this was at one of the middle schools in the central city, which I worked in, loved it. And so I pulled the cart in, and I couldn't get the TV to work. And I remember the maintenance guy, the audiovisual guy. Remember he had the audiovisual guy in the and he had his student helpers, and everybody wanted to, you know, that job.
So back during the times when we had video projectors.
And the big back TVs.
Right.
On those stands that you could roll around the school in different classrooms. Anyway.
That was 7 feet tall.
At least. Yeah. And heavy. And the big huge TVs, you took two people to load them onto the carts. But at any rate, and I remember the audiovisual guy said, "Mr. Brox, whatever you do, don't touch this button. Whatever you do, don't touch that button." So immediately, you know, my students want to come up and help. So immediately, my students, you know, my special ed students, they go straight to the button that you're not supposed to touch. Right. And to make a long story short, it worked. The TV worked, and we were able to do our lesson. So, you know, you can never underestimate. You have to understand them individually, meet them, you know, really where they are.
So for those of you in the audience, 844-967-2789, we're going to cover an array of topics because, again, I personally, I'm at wit's end of having dialogue and conversations with the people who I think don't have the ammunition to even have a discussion about education, but we're gonna have it today. I got my friend Mike Brox here, and phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by my good friend, former Milwaukee Public School educator, Mr. Michael Brox. And so I asked him to come on because I've been talking about, you know, what's happening, what's the difference with children today and families, when we're talking about why it's a little more difficult to educate them. And I always say, you know, I always go back to a time when, and you guys have heard me say this before, when there was stability, when there were both mom and dad in the home in our communities. And dad worked, made enough money, and mom stayed home, and mom worked with the children, and stability was in our neighborhood, stability was in the schools. Siblings went to the same school, were taught by the same teachers, and decades passed, and that was the stability of your neighborhood, and your community plays a major role in the education of a student. Is it safe to say that?
Well, I personally think that the most important proponent of a child's education is a child's family life. That is the basis for the American system, is the nuclear family. That is the most basic component, and that's where it all starts and stems from. So if there's some fluctuation or some breakup or some problems or some dysfunction within that unit, then of course it's going to carry over.
So then if we look today, the nuclear family, one in two is divorced. So, and that's 50%. Not in the black community.
That's across the board.
So if what you say is the family is the root of a
society,
supposedly, and of education, it's no surprise that education and the lack of it in a society is getting worse.
Well, yes, it is, and the teacher's role is increasing, and a teacher has more responsibilities to the students, whether you like it or not.
So I want to build up to before we get to the teacher's role in that, because you know, I'm we're Bluebeards, man, and and so we should have over those all those decades realized in watching children. And watching the development of our neighborhoods and our communities and see what has been at the root of the destruction that we're dealing with today. And and so education is a major part of why our communities are in the disarray that they're in. But it is a misnomer and a misconception when people point their finger at, you know, the school system and say you are the reason that these children are not educated. Now, you're an educator. How much of that is really true?
Well, two things. You have to look at what the students are learning and how the students are learning in the classroom and the set of dynamics. Now, again, you have to look at it from a historical perspective. Earl, when we were coming up, all of our desks were lined up. You had to raise your hand and be recognized. You had to ask to get out of your seat and all of these type of things.
Stability, you know, discipline.
Structure in the classroom. But, you know, the smart minds are saying now that children learn differently. And the function of the teacher, the function of us, of our teachers coming up, for me, was it was they were in close contact with our parents. They had a relationship with our parents. That, like you said before, many of our teachers had taught our younger brothers and sisters. So by the time we got to them, we were already broken in.
Right.
You know, at the same time. And the function was once they get past that. And then we also did home visits. Well, my teacher did home visits. You didn't know my teacher might show up at the doorstep for dinner, which was, you know. Yeah. One of the last things I wanted to see, I knew I was in trouble because when we were coming up, Earl, we know that we were, you know, you had your elements in the classroom and in the community, students who were, you know, tagged as troublemakers, and they were sent to a classroom, which was called then what?
But
Special C.
Yeah, Special C, but the teachers also lived in my neighborhood. They lived in the community.
Yes.
So they were a part of our community.
Oh, it's a really good point.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that people talk about that, you know, from dark ages, but that's the way it was with my group.
Well, you also know that not only your teacher, but your doctor.
Yeah, it was segregated.
You know, the Halyards.
We lived in segregated communities at that point in time. And so all of those things impacted.
Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
It was a great thing.
Okay.
From the standpoint that stability was, you knew what to expect. You knew that everybody who was in that community, for the most part, was concerned about you becoming the best that you could possibly be. You know, and so that's the way it was.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that there aren't teachers who don't feel that bill now. I'm saying that there are fewer of those kinds of teachers than there were before.
Well, a lot of teachers, you know, if we look at the numbers, I think we talked about this before, 86% of the teachers in the MPS are white. 86% of the student population is of color. And over 90% of the teachers don't send the white teachers do not send their students or their children to public school.
Well, but there's also black educators who don't send their children to public schools too. That's not solely.
But it's a high yeah, proportion, and that don't. And it's a reason for that.
So I want to get back to
yes,
the differences and what created the environment that we are in now.
Yes.
And we're going to take some time this morning to do that because I really get frustrated when people say, well, whose fault it is that Johnny's not learning? Whose fault it is that Susie's not learning?
The blame game.
And it's easy to point the finger at a public school system. So for those who don't know, the public school system has been a jewel in this country since the first time, the inception of public education. If you count the impact that that's had and the cost of it on educating this nation, you would be blown away by the impact of what public education has been able to do to move this nation forward.
Well, prior to public education, we were in an agricultural country. And if you got to second or third grade, that was fine. You probably had more education than your father did.
Right.
So, and then the transition from that to industrial society and taking the kids out of the mines and out of the fields and everything, the child labor laws and everything else is what led to the influx and the growth of public education.
So the point I'm making is that, you know, we can't be not mindful mm-hmm. of the impact the public education has had, whereas right now, there are people looking to do everything within their power to destroy it. The masses of children in this society are in the public schools. I don't care whether they're MPS or whether they're public schools in Greenfield or Greendale or in Rhinelander. Mm-hmm. The public schools are at the root of the educating the masses of the children in this society, and the attack and the assault on public education is where I want to go.
Okay.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My good friend Michael Brox is in the studio. You can join us. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. My guest is Mr. Michael Brox, retired Milwaukee Public School educators. You know, Mike.
Yes, sir.
When we look at the outcome of, you know, what's happening in our neighborhoods and in our communities, and mm-hmm. and you see children who just are not prepared to be a part of a society that is advancing every day more with technology, and the world advancing the way it is, and it's heartbreaking to know that many of these children are never going to be able to even become a part of the society, because if you aren't educated enough to understand, then not the horse and buggy. We're not going back to the horse and buggy.
No, that's
okay. That's not
gonna happen.
Okay. So technology is going to keep moving forward.
Yes.
And either you move with those with the new technology and the times, or you're left behind. Now,
well, you know, I was a throwback teacher. I went kicking and screaming into technology.
Well, so did I.
With the smart boards,
right.
And the the links in and you know, and grades, and everything is done on the computer now. The grades, attendance, communication with parents, instruction, all of that is virtual. So, you know, you have to get up to speed, and it's constantly developing, it's constantly changing. And a lot of stuff that we got from the pandemic in terms of the virtual instruction ain't going away. It's going to be here. The parents like it, teachers like it, and students love it.
So here's why I thought it was important that we take this time this morning to have this conversation,
mm-hmm.
because you and I have more years behind us than we do ahead of us.
Yes.
But those folk that we're talking about, the precious future of this nation, mm-hmm. this nation is in serious trouble because so many people are not being educated. So many children are not being educated. When technology is moving as fast as it is, and the jobs are going to be more technical than ever before, you know, it is seriously important that people understand. If you've got children who can't count,
mm-hmm.
You really do, you know.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
You've got children who have trouble, and we're not talking about
K-4, K-5. Right. We're talking about you know, even some on a high school level.
Let me ask you something. How did that happen? How have kids gotten to the high school level without knowing how to read? Whose fault is that?
It's bad teachers. Sometimes it's bad teachers. You got bad teachers that, you know, just come for the paycheck, and you know they're in there and they're not, you know, giving the students the kind of attention that they may need and the one on one. Then some of them may be overwhelmed with the numbers, you know, coming in. You know, you have one. It usually in the lower grades, elementary, K-4, K-5. Grades, you have a helper in that classroom with you. But once you get out of K-4, K-5, you're basically, you know, on your own. You may have 35, 40 students in there that you're responsible for and for their instruction. I'm not making any excuses for anybody, you know, but you know, the really good teachers find a way.
So I will say this in what I've been able to see over my last 12 years, being in and around the public school system, mm-hmm. is there are not a whole lot of classes with two teachers.
No.
Or with a teacher and a helper.
No.
And so if kids don't pick up the components to reading in the early stages, the chances of them catching it down the road is you know, worse. If you don't learn the ABCs and the 1-2-3s early in the process, and a year or two goes by, mm-hmm. you're behind. You'll never catch up.
Now, we haven't even said anything about ELA, English and Language,
I know we're talking about the, you know, just the building blocks of English and language. They have to be those early stages,
which is the alphabet,
right?
So, you know, which is the alphabet, but. Going into a classroom, a teacher, not even, I wouldn't even say the good teachers, a teacher who is at least adequate, you know, in their preparation, will go into a classroom with a lesson plan. You have to go daily. And these are done on a weekly basis. Some teachers do them a little bit far in advance, but you've got to go into that classroom with a plan.
Well, I'm not saying that. You would know better than I, mm-hmm. that at the root of the problem is that teachers don't go in with the plans. I think one of the roots of the problem is
students have a plan coming in. You can believe that.
Well, I mean,
so the teacher better have.
You correct me if I'm wrong. Children who, you know, have didn't eat last night.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Who moved?
Yes.
In the middle of the night.
Yes.
Who a mom who didn't come home.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, happens more than people would give any credence to.
It really does. You have homeless students. You have students that are, you'd be surprised the proportionate number of students that are in foster care.
I wouldn't be surprised. People in the audience
would be amazed. I was kind of taken aback or surprised at the number of my students, because a lot of times teachers don't have privy to this information. The student files are private, and it's a lot of stuff that we, even teachers, are not privy to unless something comes up where we need to know.
The point I'm attempting to make is there are all these issues, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. happen, mm-hmm. before a child even gets to school, mm-hmm. that impacts and affects their lives. Mm-hmm. And somehow we expect teachers to overcome that.
And we expect students to overcome that, too. Because automatically, when you get in the classroom, you're supposed to sit down and be prepared to work. Right. And a lot of times, like you said, Earl, they bring this baggage into the classroom with them. And it may cause them to act out.
So, and the sheer number of children who have those issues of blood in their lives are overwhelming. And if you put two children... I've seen this, mm-hmm. in grade school or even in kindergarten. You put two children who are disruptive in that classroom.
Doesn't take long.
And nobody's learning.
It doesn't. Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So it's easy to point the finger and say the teacher didn't do what she was supposed to do. But two children who are disruptive because that's the way they been reared, you know, because that's the way they've been reared.
Yes.
And but yet we don't talk about those. So my whole point in all
but,
of
know,
this.
You know, a lot, not always necessarily the way that they've been reared, because as you know, Earl, coming up, you and I.
The environment.
I came from mom and pop, very strict, no nonsense. Yeah. My aunts and uncles.
Those were the times, man.
But it's still, I acted up on occasion. So it's not always that. It's children, students are making a choice because of a lot of things. Maybe what they're watching on TV, their role models, and maybe they don't have enough role models and things like that. But they choose. And the thing about it is, when we're coming up, we were in the minority. I acted up. I'm not gonna lie, and you know I did, but I got it later on. But you know, we make students. Sometimes students just make that choice, and then it's up to the school to bring those students back into the fold.
So, now this is now a point in the conversation where I want to challenge you on. Children making decisions on acting up. The development, as you well know, of the brain of a child takes.
Oh wow!
Right.
Even some of us adults. Right.
Well, so
but yes.
When we talk about those children and they make these kinds of decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, what was there to correct us in our behavior was our parents.
Yes.
So you said you acted up, but your parents corrected
them. Well, I was the class clown for one day.
Yeah, I know.
For one day.
Okay.
Until my dad came up and he solved that problem.
So these children don't have that kind of structure.
No.
And I'm trying to make a point to those in the listening audience before people are so quick to, again, point the finger and say, those people don't want to be educated. Those people down there, what is wrong with them? You got to understand what is happening in the lives of people.
You know, if I may, and I totally, absolutely. And in my, you know, experience in teaching, you know, some of the parents, black, white, whatever, play, and I don't care. They, one thing that the underlying feeling of all these parents is they all love their children. I have never met a parent. I don't care if that parent was gone for a week, deserted, whatever. And I had high attendance for my parent-teacher conference because I stayed in touch with my parents. And they all love their kids. Now, what can we do about the behavior? Do they make some parenting mistakes? Yes. I mean, everybody's going to make mistakes, but sometimes, as you said, Earl, these students are exposed to a lot of things and that they probably shouldn't be exposed to, and they bring that baggage into the classroom with them. Absolutely.
We're gonna move a little quicker after we come back from break, but I thought it was critically important that we set some kind of foundation for what the conversation is going to be about, because it's easy to come in and say, well, the kids aren't learning. Those kids aren't learning. They're not learning because the teachers are not educating the students. The teachers don't like doing the job. They don't like the kids that they're educating. The school system is rotten and no good, and so all of those things that it's easy for people to say, then you can say those things, but without the foundation of why, you'd be wrong.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And so many of these people have been and continue to say things that are not right, and should be based on fact. Got to go to a break. My good friend Michael Brox is in the studio.
It's a pleasure.
He's a retired educator at Milwaukee Public Schools. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by a good friend, a recently retired Milwaukee Public School educator, Mr. Michael Brocks. Let's go to the phone lines and my good friend Al. How you doing, Al?
Good morning, gentlemen, and you too, Mike.
Good morning. oh, my goodness.
I haven't seen you in a while. But anyway, right, how you going to be retired? Man, I'm not retired. You can't quit.
Well, you know what? I went back after my retirement. I was like a fighter that took one fight too many. I said, "Oh no, I can't do it."
I hear you.
But no, I love my kids. I think about them all the time. I'm going to their proms and things like that, and they know that they have access to me. And like my students, I followed them. Some of them from second grade through eighth grade. You become attached to them after a while.
So Al, you know well about the conversation we're having.
Because
there's so many people who are so quick, to say Milwaukee Public Schools is a failure. Everything about the school system is a failure. We need to destroy it. We need to tear it apart and start all over again. As I always tell people, that's where almost 70,000 of the children are, and that's where I'm going to focus my work and attention to save the 70,000. Go ahead.
But Earl, when I worked in the school system, it was 112,000 students.
Right.
Yep. Yes.
We were the 11th or 12th largest school district in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I coached for 49 years. I coached high school sports.
Wow.
One of the things you've touched upon, and everything you said, you and Mike, is true about the issues that the children come to school with. But one thing you overlooked, and I'm not saying you intentionally overlooked it, but you overlooked, and that is many of the kids come to school and become disruptive, not because they want to be disruptive. They come to school because they want attention
yes.
that they're not getting at home. And yes. they want positive attention, not the negative, but, as all the years I coached high school sports, kids have latched on to me for life.
Yes.
I get, birthday cards, hundreds of them. I get anniversary cards, what have you. My wife was a teacher for 35 years, and, we get flooded with all kinds of stuff, and sometimes our children get jealous because we get so much attention from all these other kids, what have you. But the point is, a lot of those kids have all kinds of skills.
Yes.
They just don't have the attention they need to direct their skills into positive behavior.
And Al, like you said, they're going to get your attention. And one thing about students that seems to be, universal is that they'll find a way to, they want to impress their teacher. I have not met a student.
They want to impress somebody.
They want to impress somebody. But, you give them more quality time, Al, than they're probably getting at home or anywhere else. I know it.
That's correct.
I know
it. And most teachers don't have that kind of time to get put in. When you got a class for 30 kids, you can't give them all individual attention. You don't have that kind of time. But it's others in the school system, the teachers' aides, the counselors, the coaches. Somebody's got to step up.
And a lot of that's been cut out.
That's where we're lacking. And it's not it's the support system of the school system.
So, Al, you're talking about You're talking about cultivating a human child, a human being, and all human beings need to be cultivated, and so that's that part of it is where the trouble lies, unfortunately, far too often in our neighborhoods and in our communities, and yet we somehow expect for the teachers, as you stated, who don't have the time to cultivate, that stuff should happen from parents early
That's
on.
That's correct. But see, when I worked for the school system, one of my jobs was parent involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And through Title I, we had the largest parent advisory council in the state and the second largest in the nation. There were 102 parents.
Awesome.
We set up classes for the parents to teach them what we were teaching their children, because a lot of the parents didn't have a high school education, et cetera.
Right.
And they couldn't help their children at home, so we set up programs to help the parents learn what the kids were learning.
Al, let me ask you, if that many years ago they thought it was important to have that, why is it not important to have it now?
Because that's they want the money.
That's the issue. The bottom
they want
line.
To channel the money into something else.
Yes.
And right now, when I worked for Title I programs, when we worked there, we had computer labs for the kids. We had reading labs. We had math labs.
Did you have a budget then that you were working with?
Well, okay, we started with $4 million and we went to Washington and came back with 12. The point is,
yes,
now they have one room called the Parent Center for Title I, but there's no teacher in there. And
that's correct.
It's only for the parents who don't show up, and the children can't use it. So the reading labs are gone. The math labs are gone. The ancillary assistance is gone. So it's not the school. It's the support system of the school.
So, Al, all of those things that you are talking about that people knew helped lead to the success and development of children, the people knew that ahead of time. But when you are in a system, but when you're in a system that you have less and less children in that system, then the budget gets cut more and more and more, and that's kind of where we are.
But the budget didn't get cut. The budget kept rising. The services got cut.
Right.
And that's where the issue was. They kept getting more and more money, but they chose to turn to politics rather than education. And I ran for school board twice.
Okay.
In 83, the last time, and lost.
Okay.
But the point is, the point I'm making is the fact that people were getting on school board as a stepping stone to get to a higher position in state government or the city government. They weren't looking at the needs of the children or the system. And they've used the school boards, et cetera, as a stepping stone in politics, which does not help anybody.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call, man. We got to go to a break.
Have a good day, fam.
Okay, thanks, Al.
Hold the thought. We'll let you respond on the other side. In the studio, Mr. Michael Brox, educator, retired educator from Milwaukee Public Schools and other districts. And you, 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
To